beautifully.
So I just want to highlight for something. I will, at the conclusion of the presentation, have a lot of questions. I cannot support this in its current form, and there are things that I think have to be further cooked before it can earn my support. So we have 10 minutes now before the next time certain. We can tee it up, and the council can do whatever it wants, but there's some issues I'm going to highlight for a council concern, which we're really not going to have a chance to fully vet before the next time certain. We can plow ahead and do the
best
we can.
Let's go ahead and plow ahead, and let's see what the will of the council is at the end of this, and if we need to continue it, we'll continue it. But I'd like to go ahead and honor the comments that we made this morning, since this was actually teed up originally for this morning. We had an extraordinarily busy agenda today, and a number of the agenda items actually engendered much more discussion and debate than we anticipated. So here we are. Let me just say this. This resolution adopts two revised comprehensive financial management policies and a related procedure that addresses the city's financial planning process and the annual budget process. These policies were vetted during a citywide review and comment process. So we have Jennifer Cooperman here. She's the city's CFO to explain the revisions and give us a brief presentation.
Great.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. And I'm joined by Jessica Kennard, Interim Budget Director, as well. I'm here to present revisions to two of the city's comprehensive financial management policies, FIN 203 Financial Planning. I made changes to this but didn't print it out. FIN 203 Financial Planning, which has been revised to incorporate specific council direction for bureaus to do the following: to prioritize asset management as a citywide core business function, including life cycle costing and setting aside replacement reserves to support the city's investments in capital assets and equipment and to ensure intergenerational equity; to develop long-term financial plans in addition to the currently required five-year plans to improve the city's financial planning and budgeting processes; and to highlight and quantify in these financial plans and in the capital improvement plans any funding gaps with proposed strategies to address them. FIN 204 budget has been revised to incorporate council direction for bureaus to do the following: to secure council approval for financial commitments such as bureau director decisions or litigation settlements of $500,000 or more after the current year budget is approved that a bureau's budget cannot accommodate; to absorb labor agreement costs that exceed inflation and include any resultant employee and or service reductions in the financial impact statement that accompanies the labor agreement ordinance. Additional proposed changes to FIN 208 budget will do the following: change guidance for amending the budget during the year to, quote, urgent and unforeseen needs rather than needs that are just, quote, unanticipated; allow one-time resources to be used to address citywide liabilities that are not included in the city's five-year forecast. It will codify the current practice of restricting capital set-aside resources to projects relating to emergency preparedness, parks and recreation, and transportation. It will consolidate the capital set-aside ranking and funding process to once per year during the annual budget process rather than during both the fall supplemental budget and the annual budget process. And it will set certain limitations on the competitive special appropriations grant process. As the mayor mentioned, these policies were out for citywide comment. That was after a task force of Bureau budget staff helped craft these changes. I'd like to thank all the Bureau staff who devoted time to reading these and the handful of people who submitted comments, and we're available to answer any questions you might have.
Commissioner Fish.
I'm happy to follow any other comments. I've got a bunch of questions. So Jennifer, first of all, thank you for bringing this forward. And
I have three issues. One, I want to see if it's actually part of your proposal. Two is I'm going to raise an issue that I would like to be part of this proposal if possible. And three is I'd like to seek a clarification of one of the recommendations. So let's start with the first point. Does the proposals, the changes that you're recommending, do they address a situation where a bureau is sued to enforce compliance with some federal or state law and is therefore required to disclose that lawsuit and seek council approval before resolving the lawsuit?
It's intended, yes, that the litigation paragraph, the new litigation paragraph in FIN 204 would address that situation unless the Bureau's budget could accommodate that.
Unless it could accommodate it.
Already. And if it could accommodate it, then presumably that gets handled within the Bureau and with the Bureau Director and that commissioner in charge. But if the settlement requires an expense that is larger than their budget can accommodate, then it would be, the intent is that that would be brought for council discussion.
Before the litigation is resolved.
Yes.
And this, of course, is a, I think it's fair to say this is a result of some thinking that we, of some concerns that we all had when the Portland Bureau of Transportation was sued because of inadequate curb cuts.
Yes.
And a settlement in the range of $100 million was being negotiated and discussed without disclosing that to the council. And since there was an expectation that there would be some general fund portion of pickup mm-hmm. to resolve that case, the concern was that you can't have a bureau, this predates Commissioner Udaly's tenure, that you cannot have a bureau that takes on a contingent liability of that magnitude without having the council involved in the decision-making, including whether it's a good settlement, the timing of the settlement, and the payout. Is that a fair statement?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm pleased to see that's in there. The second thing I want to bring to your attention is something which is in here, and it seems like a significant enough departure from current practice. I want to make sure my colleagues are all aware of what this would mean and also put some price tags on it. And it's on page 3.
Are you looking at FIN 203 or 204?
Oh, I'm sorry. 204.
Okay.
Was, I don't have it broken out that way.
There's also sort of a cheat sheet, the what's changed and why. Also breaks these down into little bite-sized pieces.
So I have it in my cheat sheet. It's page 3 of my cheat sheet under operating policies.
Yeah.
About halfway down the page.
Mm-hmm.
It says...
So that's FIN 204.
Right.
FIN 204.
I'm confused. Why do I have something that says FIN 203 if we're talking about something...
We're doing both.
I don't see a 204.
Commissioner Udaly, okay. Do you see, do you have the four-page cheat sheet?
I have the what's changed sheet, yeah.
What's changed and why?
Yeah.
So it should be 4 pages, and I'm on page 3.
Of the what's new
okay,
and why?
Okay, that, okay.
Yeah,
all right.
That,
it says on the left margin, about two-thirds mm-hmm. the way down, operating policies.
Yes, got it.
And then the third box within operating policy says, quote, added that bureaus shall absorb labor agreement costs that exceed inflation. Employee and or service requirements are to be included in the FIS of labor agreement ordinance. So that's a pretty significant departure from our current practice. Could you, Madam Director, could you explain what our current practice is and why this is being proposed?
So I'm going to let Jessica talk about current practice, and then I can speak to some of the motivations behind this.
Okay. Good afternoon, Council. Jessica Kennard, Interim City Budget Director. So current practice for labor bargaining agreements is our HR labor team engages in negotiations when a contract is up and brings forward, before that contract expires, a negotiated agreement for council appropriation, but oftentimes council is agreeing to this contract agreement and associated costs not in concert with budget processes. So it's sort of on an off cycle and can be on an ad hoc basis. So part of this, the goal is to bring those processes, because there are significant cost implications associated with these agreements, into alignment with other budget decision-making processes.
Yes, but the, okay,
And so, yes.
I can understand why you'd want them to be on a certain timeline. I can understand why you'd want to have a certain level of communication. What I don't understand is why the host bureau would eat the costs of the labor negotiations above the rate of inflation, particularly where we have a history as a council of saying that low-wage workers should see their wages bumped up to a certain amount. That's a council policy. Why would that come out of the bureau's pocket rather than out of the Cal?
Absolutely. So the way that the proposal is written, so first and part of the current practice is that council typically approves a contract and the cost implications, whatever the general fund cost implications of that contract are, is automatically baked into the next Cal.
Right.
So they're covered. They're sort of the resources are taken off the top. The current proposed change would first connect the immediate trade-offs of those increased costs with it encourages the Bureau, or it requires the Bureau to articulate what the trade-offs would be internally for them to absorb those costs, but it also allows for them to request those resources in the next budget cycle.
Well, let's take the example of something Commissioner Fritz shepherded through the Council. We have an arbitration in which an arbitrator rules against the city on casual workers. We're required to negotiate a collective bargaining agreement, and the council has a policy that is about, you know, at least $15 an hour, which for some of the employees is well above the rate of inflation. What would have been the cost to Parks if they had to absorb the costs above inflation?
So, and I'm trying to recall that precise
about $4 million, yes, and I know that because we actually did put it then into a specific budget request in the next budget.
That's
what,
right.
And so, but Commissioner Fritz, let's extend that point. If you had put it in a specific budget request and not have received the $4 million mm-hmm. for that contract, where would you have found the $4 million?
We would stop. We'd then have had to eat it.
Right.
We would then have had to find the savings within the Bureau, and that was the policy choice that the council then made, as it turned erroneously that $4 million wasn't enough. But it was very similar to what's being proposed here, except that we didn't up front say to cut $4 million from the parks budget, you'd need to do this, this, and this. We had that discussion then in the budget process that either the council gave us an extra $4 million ongoing, or we would need to make $4 million of cuts at that time.
So, all right, so let me just be clear. It is well understood by my colleagues that anything above the rate of inflation on labor negotiations that are handled by a centralized office of this city that have specific labor reps handling it, anything above the rate of inflation, you are at risk. It is well understood that you are at risk of eating that cost out of your own budget.
Yes, and I support that. I think we've had a discussion about this at a work session or maybe an executive session. But the point is that we want the labor relations team to understand this as well, that they can't be promising this, that, and the other in the contract, which then comes to us, and we have a choice of yes or no, not something in between.
I think the motivation is transparency and presenting you with trade-offs. And there are three constituencies that are at the table. There's the HR group, the labor negotiating group, the Bureau, and the council, and making sure that those three constituencies are aligned.
Okay, but just let's be very clear here. I've served on this council for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Under this rule, a commissioner in charge could play by this rule, have the council declare that there is a policy of paying people above the rate of inflation, could, because of financial circumstances, then subsequently require, against the commissioner in charge's desire or will, that the Bureau eat that cost increase. Is that is entirely plausible?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the recourse is for the commissioner in charge to recommend against the labor contract, but would only be one of five votes.
Yes. So, and again, I think that the distinction is the cost will be absorbed by bureaus in one way or another. The question is whether the trade-off discussion is happening at the same time as many other budget conversations are, so in the context of all of the trade-offs that are being made around limited general fund resources, or if the labor bargaining expense is being taken off the top first without the greater context of the other trade-offs that might be made citywide or even in that respective bureau.
Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. I guess I'm concerned that we will not be in the room negotiating a contract. We have human resource representatives with labor representatives that will come back with a contract that then will be voted on by the entire city council. It appears that we would be then the commissioner in charge would have their hands tied. And I agree with my colleague. Basically, we would be forced into a position of voting in opposition to a labor contract because we know the impact that it's going to have on the budget for the bureaus that we manage. Now, I just need to know. So I have two bureaus that are going to be going through labor contract talks this year, right? The talks are going to be completed after we've completed the budget talks. So how possibly could I make an informed decision since those contracts are going to come after we have the budget conversation?
It does present a timing challenge, particularly for this next cycle. Again, I think that the purpose is to bring forward some of those conversations around what the costs are that the Bureau and the Commissioner in charge might be willing to support earlier in the labor negotiation conversations. But it is ultimately a timing and a policy preference question for Council.
So to put a little clarity on this, because it doesn't work all that differently today. I mean, if we have a labor negotiation and it's substantially above the rate of inflation, there still is a council-wide discussion about the priorities in that bureau.
Mm-hmm.
And the council could say, well, we negotiated a contract that is beyond the rate of inflation, but we don't support fully funding that bureau, including that rate. In other words, take it out of somewhere else in the bureau. I mean, that is not an uncommon scenario around here in a cut budget.
Correct.
Is it?
No, that has happened, certainly.
And to answer Commissioner Fish's question, which is a legitimate question, the commissioner in charge could still come back to the council with a directive to develop to basically make those programs whole. I mean, so what we've done is we've just flipped this in terms of when the disclosure is going to be made. Commissioner Fritz.
The real question is it a specific budget ask, or does it just automatically go into the CAL?
The CAL, exactly.
And I think it's better to have it as a specific budget ask, that it should, for instance, police. Police just assumed when we gave them the huge raise that we were going to find $6 million for them in the rest of the budget, that they weren't going to have any impacts on their budget, and that the rest of the city would eat it. I think that the police or any union that's negotiating ought to be thinking, do we want this pay raise if it means that fewer of our members are going to have jobs or some similar trade-offs?
Yeah, if I could, it actually strengthens our hand in labor negotiations. Particular example, it certainly is.
I have the great burden of having served here for 10 years, so I don't actually have the same recollection of the frequency with which we've had bureaus eat the labor costs. I think they have traditionally gone into the CAL for better or worse. And I also, since I'm also a veteran of sitting in on council on closed-door meetings to discuss labor strategy, I want to echo what Commissioner Hardesty said, which is we have a centralized unit that does most of the negotiations and then presents an agreement. I guess what this rule would require is the commissioner in charge to make a standing objection throughout the conversations about labor negotiations, not to exceed the rate of inflation, and to be very clear with his or her colleagues that if the council thinks there's a good value in going above the rate of inflation, you know, buying some change, some equity concern about paying people a minimum, you know, a certain standard of living or whatever, that will come back as a requested ad package. I have to say, in thinking about how we currently do things and how we would operate under this, this seems very clumsy to me. And the timing of labor negotiations and the requests for and how we do our budgeting, the fact that these are not aligned, makes it a potential nightmare to figure out your budget and to have some consistency with the public. So I think it is laudable to have a more accountable system where we don't tell our labor partners they can automatically assume rates increases over the rate of inflation, that there is some trade-off. I think it is laudable to say that not every contract, including the richest possible contract, goes into the CAL. I think this is going to have significant unforeseen problems, laudable as it may be. And so I wanted to put those on the record. It may be a good budget. It may end up being one of those things that is a good financial practice, but adapted to our form of government, to our timelines, I actually think this is going to cause chaos. And it's certainly going to cause me to fundamentally rethink the sort of movement that we have in this city towards consolidating city services. I am going to be less inclined to have HR over here handle my negotiations if I'm looking at potential cuts in my bureau because they happen to think that to get to a contract there's a trade-off.
So that's a compelling argument, but let me give the counter argument. And this is a good conversation. I'm sorry we waited 8 hours into our council session to have this. The counter argument is we negotiate in good faith, and let's assume we negotiate always in good faith, and we negotiate for whatever reason a contract in a particular bargaining unit that is above or well above the rate of inflation. Commissioner Fish is talking about the uncertainty that is then created inside the Bureau, and I agree with that. But the way we do it now is we're creating uncertainty everywhere else. We're saying, okay, in Bureau X, let's say the Police Bureau, we're agreeing to a certain increase in salaries, benefits, wages. It's bumped into the CAL. What we have actually just done by default is put everybody else's budget at risk. We have actually made a budgetary decision on behalf of every other bureau without any overt discussion about the trade-offs. And so what this forces is a very uncomfortable conversation, I'll be the first to admit, particularly looking at my portfolio, of not only what are we negotiating and what are the comps and what seems fair, but how the heck are we actually going to pay for it? So it pushes that question into the present alongside the labor negotiations.
So, Mayor, I completely agree with what you just said. What I've been trying to do, because this is at variance with our current practice, is I've been trying to spin off how practically will this work. So let's assume we're in the midstream in a fiscal year. A contract is negotiated and ratified that has well above the rate of inflation. I think the only prudent thing that each of us would do under those circumstances is calculate the amount above the rate of inflation and do mid-year cuts. Because there is no guarantee of that being picked up in the next budget. We are looking at the alternative of an over expenditure ordinance, which God forbid is the way to resolve this. So depending on the timing of the labor negotiations, it effectively works as a sequester. We're forcing cuts ahead of knowing whether there is either an appetite among our colleagues to fund the amount above inflation or available resources or both. So, and I'm not trying to treat this as some, you know, academic exercise. I think we are making a significant change. I think this needs a little more cooking, but again, I appreciate that it may be a best practice. I'm just not sure how it actually works with our form of government and the way and the timeline that we operate on in terms of our budget and our labor negotiations.
Sorry, I should disagree respectfully and have had the same number of budgets as you, even though you have 6 months more service than I. I think we always have commissioners who are coming to the budget process making the case for the packages that they are requesting, particularly in the case of the low-income workers in parks. That was something that we all agreed on the contract, and we had the discussion, and then there was the package in the budget process that we all agreed, ouch, that's a lot of money, and yes, we should do it. And so, but I just think it should not be automatically put into the current appropriation level or the CAL, because then it's just assumed that everybody else is going to share the cost. I mean, maybe there may be some budgets where we'll say, well, you're going to take a little bit more, you know, everybody else is getting a 1% cut, this Bureau X is going to get a 2% because they've given this really expensive contract that we felt, the council felt like had to give. A clarifying question. When we say no more than inflation, is that then the employees would get the cost of living adjustment as well? So are we actually talking twice the cost of living adjustment, or what do you mean by no more than inflation?
So I believe that is based on the fact that already as part of CAL, we include a cost of living adjustment in the CAL allocation already. So it's essentially the amount that will be above what is already included in the Bureau's CAL target going into the next year.
But if we get the cost of living adjustment across the board and the union contracts don't say you're going to get your cost of, well, they say you're going to get a floor of 1% and a cap of whatever it would be. And then we often have seen, and you'll get 2% above that. So Josh Harwood, city economist.
Thanks, Commissioner and Mayor. Yeah, Josh Harwood, the city economist. I think we're using inflation here colloquially to essentially mean things that aren't included in the CAL target now. So you're right. They could negotiate something below what we have in the CAL target now, and it would show savings in the forecast. That hasn't been a typical experience for me. When we have priced out contracts, when HR has priced out contracts before, the adjustment to the CAL target is an adjustment above what we've already forecasted for.
Right.
The adjustment that they have.
So I think what we're actually saying then is that there won't be pay increases except for cost of living, unless, and that's the piece that would go into the, you have to ask extra for it.
Yeah, I think
if
that's
if you
right.
give a 2% across the board in addition to whatever the cost of living is.
Yes.
So that's, I just wanted to clarify that.
Well, I'm glad you did seek to clarify it, because now it's as clear as mud to me. because we don't set cost of living except annually, and we do it. You give us a number on cost of living. So how on earth can we? How on earth do we even have that number if there's mid-year bargaining?
So that's what I'm saying, is that there would not be an additional number in addition to cost of living in the new contract. There wouldn't be an across-the-board X percent in addition to cost of living, because there's always, in every contract, there's always a floor and a ceiling on what cost of living can be.
Yeah, and it's defined by the, just to clarify, it's defined by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So, I don't come up with it myself, per se.
And then often a contract will say, and you're going to get this much raise in addition, either across the board or in steps or in something extra.
And that's the amount that we're talking about here.
Yes. So you're actually saying that anything above the expected cost of living would be something that the Bureau would have to consider absorbing, yeah, or else ask Council for an ad package to not absorb it?
Yes.
So it begs the question for me, kind of, how are we directing human resources and contract talks? I mean, are we just saying that there are going to be no raises other than cost of living? Because it feels like, as the commissioner in charge, you're trying to tie my hands, and I'm not even in the room making the negotiation. Somebody else is in the room making a negotiation that then comes back, right? So it does feel like just setting this as policy means that whatever they're negotiating in some other room somewhere, that once it comes to the city council, that means that we either all support it as a council, or I'm forced to vote against it if I believe that there's going to be a better use of whatever the increase is in my bill in some other way.
Executive decision time.
Okay.
Can I just respond?
Please, yeah.
Real quick.
Commissioner, yes, go for it.
the current practice has been everybody else is going to help pay for this. So, yeah, that looks good. I'll take that for my folks, or I've negotiated down to this for my folks. So I think that what this is attempting to do is to have more responsibility for the commissioner in charge and for the Bureau to be really thinking, is this, if we don't get an extra allocation from the general fund, is this really the best way to spend our resources?
So I apologize, I'm going to have to leave, but I will say that I'm in no way ready to vote for this either. I'd love to have a briefing, and I'd like to learn more about what the unintended consequences would be for this if this was actually passed by the council. Thank you.
So, as I was saying, as if on cue from Commissioner Hardesty, I want people to feel as comfortable about this as possible, since we are passing long-term policies, fiscal policies for the whole council. I think it's really important that we all walk this walk together and that we all feel equally comfortable about what is in this document. So I would propose that we continue this until the first week of April. I believe everybody is here. Is that correct?
Yes, everybody
Good.
Is present.
So why don't we do that, and then we'll have time and the budget director and the chief financial officer and the economist who provides good conversation. Let's walk the floor. Let's collect all of the questions or concerns that people have. We'll see if we can answer those, and if not, then we can entertain some amendments to the policy. But I don't want to take a vote today and have a 3-2 split. I think that would be a mistake.
And we'll hold public testimony until the next time, too.
Absolutely, yeah. So we'll just continue this.
Yeah. Can I indulge you for one additional minute?
You bet, of course.
So you've addressed the question of lawsuits. Thank you for the clarification on that. I have some additional questions about labor costs and cost shifting. We'll talk about that between now and April. The third issue I just want to raise from my colleagues, and they're going to get another preview of this issue next Tuesday, is that Parks has put in a request for O&M for 38 different improvements that were built under Commissioner Fritz's watch, playgrounds, parks, trails, other things, which under well-established practice and under a change in our policy led by Commissioner Saltzman and subsequently baked into our FIN 2.03.02, we have a policy that says that the operations and maintenance money will follow new assets that are opened. And it has consistently been applied for the 10 years that I have served on this body. What makes this particularly of concern to me is of the 38 different assets that Commissioner Fritz has opened or will open shortly, I believe a majority of them are in East Portland. So we are using systems development charge money, bond money, and other resources to build out our system and provide for equity. Under the budget, under the CBO's decision on the ad package that the parks put in, CBO is recommending no O&M for any of those assets and is taking the position that it is a council discretionary act as to whether to put O&M to follow the assets. There's a little more complication in terms of the timing of the ask. We're gonna mention that in our parks briefing on Tuesday for the budget committee, but this would be the first time in 10 years that O&M has not followed the opening of new facilities, and I'm going to urge that policy be once again codified so that we don't have a situation where this is being objected to.
Commissioner Fritz.
Jennifer Cooperman, you're not proposing to change that policy, right?
The CBO has proposed to change it.
Well, that we have a financial policy on it, so.
I just want to mention that I have put in an absence for 4:30 this afternoon and want to apologize in advance to our friends at Work Systems. I'm hoping to get to see the beginning of your presentation if we are...
Good. All right. So let's do this. We will continue item number 229 to Wednesday, April 3rd. It will be in the morning session. I don't want to assign a time certain to it at this particular moment. I want to keep that flexible. I want to thank our panel. This is a very important conversation, but it's one I want to make sure where we all walk it together. So thank you. The item is continued. Last but not least today is item number